Hey guys, my name is Annie and welcome to my channel, 10 to Life, where I am bringing you full true crime cases in under 10 minutes. Full cases, start to finish, but only what you want to hear. None of the boring storylines or the empty plots, just the key facts, the most insane details, and all the unexpected stuff we know happens along the way. I'm coming to you directly from my apartment here in Brooklyn, New York, which if you're watching the video version of this on my YouTube channel, you can see beautiful New York behind me. And if you're listening to the podcast version of this, but you want to check out the video version, feel free to head over to my YouTube channel. If you guys like what you hear, please like, comment, share, review, and don't forget to subscribe by clicking that subscribe button below. If you have any case recommendations, send them my way. I would love to hear them. And don't forget to follow me on social at @_AnnieElise. So let's get into the case. Hey guys, welcome back. So the case that we're gonna be discussing today is a wild one. It is literally the roller coasters of all roller coasters. There are so many insane twists and it's literally so crazy that you have to hear it to even believe it. But because of that and because of the details that are really involved and it being so extensive, this is gonna probably end up being more of like a 15 to life or a 20 to life. I just don't think that I'm going to be able to fit it all in 10 minutes. So giving you a little bit of a heads up. And it is so crazy that literally in the last few minutes of this video, there is a twist and a turn that nobody could have seen coming. So make sure you stay tuned for that. And without further ado, let's jump right into it. Today's case is taking us to Colorado Springs, Colorado. And we are going to be talking about 11-year-old Gannon Stauch. Just a few months ago, on January 27th, 2020, Gannon was reported missing by his stepmom, Leticia, and she called the police around 6:55 p.m. and said that earlier that day, Gannon left the house around 3 or 4 p.m. to go to a friend's house but never returned. She says that he was supposed to have arrived an hour prior to when she was making this call, so roughly about 5 p.m., but that he never showed up and she was concerned. The initial press release that went out described Gannon as being a runaway, and that was really based on details that Leticia, his stepmother, had provided to the authorities. Because remember, she had said that he went over to a friend's house, he left for his friends, but he never came back. Something that oftentimes runaways will say. They'll say they're going out with their friends, and then that's when they don't return. So initially, it was listed as a runaway case. But shortly into the disappearance of Gannon, his stepmother Leticia's story started dramatically changing. And let's fast forward to just 2 days after she reported him missing to January 29th. On Wednesday, January 29th, Leticia goes to the police department to be interviewed, to really give her statement, give information as to what happened, because now it's been 2 days that have passed and Gannon still has not been found and has not returned home. So she arrives around noon, which was, by the way, 2 hours late than when her scheduled interview was supposed to take place. So a little bit of a red flag there. So Leticia arrives to this interview 2 hours late, which, like we said, is a little bit odd to begin with. And she arrives with tons of pieces of paper, notes for the detectives, things that she wants to give them information on, and she also arrives with her SUV being still wet, looking as though it just came from a car wash. So all of these things start to point to some little red flags. And then the detectives, of course, ask her, like, walk us through what happened, tell us what happened the day Gannon went missing. And this is where her story initially changes completely from what she had said just 2 days prior when she reported Gannon is missing as a possible runaway and that he had gone off to go to his friend's house and never returned. And here's what she tells them. Leticia begins to tell detectives what happened that day, and she goes into every crazy detail and gives them this grandiose story of what took place. And she says that a man named Eduardo came into the house, raped her at gunpoint, and abducted Gannon. And she says she met Eduardo at a construction site, and that earlier in the week, Gannon had knocked a candle over, it burned the carpet, so she had called Eduardo to fix it on January 26th, that Sunday, the day before Gannon went missing. And that she said, I'll give you the garage code, you can just come over on Monday, fix it, and then I'll figure out payment and we'll be good. But according to Leticia, that's not what happened. He didn't just let himself in using the garage code, fix the burned carpet, and then let himself out. And she says when she got home that afternoon, Eduardo was waiting for her and was in the basement, but allowed her to greet her daughter when her daughter returned home later that afternoon. But that he was there this entire time and really kind of holding her captive and raping her. A very odd, bizarre story. She says that he was raping her between 3:30 p.m. and 4:30 4:30 p.m. And remember, she said that was the window of time in which Gannon said he left to go to a friend's house originally. She also says that he hit her on the head and she may have blacked out. And then she says that Gannon jumped on the rapist's back, he pulls Gannon off, throws him across the room, and then holds her at gunpoint, demanding a suitcase and a cardboard box. Then she tells investigators that he kidnapped Gannon and she cleaned the scene. And when investigators offer her a rape exam, she declines. Which is another red flag. And if you were with me on the last video, we kind of did a little ding, 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 all these red flags that go off. Here's another one. And I think we're on like number three now. At the end of the interview, detective sees Letitia's phone, and then she starts complaining of shortness of breath as though she's having a panic attack. Because of that, Letitia's transferred to the hospital to be further examined. They seize her vehicle to do a search and investigate all of that. And then she leaves the hospital without telling anybody. Boom, red flag again. From the get, detectives didn't believe her story. They thought that the statements she was making were false, that it didn't align with anything, that if this were the real story, why wouldn't you have said this to begin with? Why'd you make this huge lie up that Gannon went off to go see his friends and just never returned? It doesn't add up and it makes no sense. So they became suspicious almost immediately of his stepmom, Letitia. The very next day on January 30th, because of all of these stories that aren't adding up and all of this information that is looking suspicious, they changed the classification of Gannon's case from runaway to endangered and missing person. And officials say they put thousands of hours into the search effort for Gannon. There were flyers everywhere. There were search parties everywhere. The whole community came together trying to search, which there was also an outcry from the community that Letitia was not participating and that if she truly was worried about the well-being of Gannon, why wasn't she on the ground searching more with all the other search parties? So, another red flag. Over the next few days, Letitia starts evading police questioning. She is disappeared, essentially, and they're unsure where she is. They're trying to locate her for questioning, but she's nowhere to be found. And on February 3rd, less than a week after Gannon was first reported missing by Letitia, she does her first on-camera interview. And the reason she does this is to address comments that have been made on social media and in the news vilifying her. So it's not even an on-camera interview to speak on Gannon's behalf or to advocate for Gannon's safe return. It's really to just defend herself against all these comments that are starting to paint her as the villain. She says to this reporter while she's doing the interview that I've taken care of Gannon for 2 years. I would never hurt that child. I love that child. I know there's questions out there, but that's up to the investigators. The truth will surface. She continues by saying, we're going to find Gannon. Gannon will return home. And I'm just ready for Gannon to return home. She also says that the family has received upwards of 20 death threats. And here's what I find also odd. When the reporter asks her, you know, we hear this all the time in missing children cases, and missing person cases in general, they ask, okay, if you would look into the camera right now and talk to Gannon and you were to say something, what would you say? So she shares with the reporter, but then after that, she asks if she can redo it. And on the second take, she appears to be much more emotional, as though she knew that the first one wasn't good enough or it wasn't staged good enough. So she asks the reporter for a redo, which, how many red flags can we possibly have in this case?
Any message for Gannon?
The message for Gannon I have is, Gannon, when you get here, you'll be able to truly tell what happened. And then I really hope I get a sincere apology from everyone who has made all those things, especially from my husband.
We just wanted to add a message to Gannon from my family, is that we love you and miss you, and we hope that you come home soon. And Gannon, I can't wait till you can come home and let everyone know that you're okay.
The very next day, on February 4th, a week now after Gannon was first reported missing, a neighbor comes forward with surveillance video that they had. And on the video, it shows Letitia and Gannon leaving that morning and then returning in the afternoon with what appears to be Gannon on camera. The neighbor explains that he decided to look through his footage as the search was intensifying and as there was all of these questions looming out there, and that what he picks up on that video is them getting in a red pickup truck that morning around 10:13 a.m. and then returning around 2:19 p.m. and he was unsure if he saw Gannon or not. And investigators say this is just one piece of a very, very, very complicated puzzle. So is it true that he really ever returned home that afternoon? Or was this something that maybe happened off-site when they left in the morning and he disappeared there? We can't really figure out at this point because there's so many conflicting statements what's the truth and what the timeline really is. It's tough to establish a timeline at this point because not only are there so many conflicting statements, but there's people who say they did see Gannon when he returned home. There are people who said they couldn't tell if it was him on the video. I mean, there's just so many question marks happening now. The neighbor also says that he showed this footage to Gannon's father, and that Gannon's father broke down crying and just exclaimed, "She lied. She lied about everything. He never went to a friend's house." So at that point, he knows something sinister and there must have been foul play involved. A couple days later, on February 5th, Gannon's family makes a very emotional on-camera plea, and his biological mother is there, his father and his sister, and they plead for anybody with any sort of tips, even if they're scared, to come forward, to share any information that they have, and how their hearts are just completely broken without Gannon, and how they just want his safe return and to please help them. Neither parent addresses the rumors and the speculation that is currently happening about Letitia. However, at the end of the video, Gannon's younger sister comes forward and says, "I love you, Bubba." It's just so sad, and you can see in this video the emotion that is pouring out of this family hoping for their 11-year-old boy's safe return home. By February 16th, which is now 3 weeks since Gannon was last seen, they've collected about 550 tips from all of these people all across the state and across the country, but they still have not found Gannon. However, the investigation continues over the next several weeks, and tons of pieces of evidence are collected. And these pieces of evidence are later outlined in an unsealed affidavit that gets released, which we're going to talk about a little bit later in the video. It's been 2 weeks of them collecting tons of evidence, hitting the pavement, working this investigation, and on March 2nd, Letitia is arrested. And she's arrested in South Carolina and held without bond before being extradited back to Colorado Springs. And while Gannon still had not been found yet at this point, she was still charged based on all of the evidence that they had collected, which we are going to be reviewing, as I mentioned, in that unsealed affidavit. On March 11th, Letitia makes her very first court appearance, and while she didn't speak, authorities say that they had received over 100 search warrants in the case in order to gain evidence against Letitia. And they say that because of the evidence they've collected, they are confident that she is their suspect. On March 20th, 2 weeks after Letitia's arrest and nearly 2 months after Gannon was first reported missing, authorities announced that they have found Gannon's body. But they didn't find his body in Colorado Springs, where he lived. They found his body all the way in Florida under a bridge. It was found in a suitcase under the highway by local construction workers. But how did Gannon get all the way to Florida? How did his body get all the way to Florida? That doesn't make any sense. So now's where the investigation really gets detailed. Details on what led to the discovery were not immediately released, but the sheriff's department did ask anybody who had seen Letitia in Florida to please come forward. And a couple of weeks after the discovery of Gannon's body, that affidavit that I was mentioning earlier was unsealed, and this was now early April. The affidavit outlines all of the work that was being done behind the scenes by the investigators, all of the evidence they collected. It details how Letitia tried to deceive them multiple times, including concocting this fake rape story to try to get herself out of this. And it really just outlines everything that tragically took place and what truly happened to Gannon. During their investigation, investigators eventually found blood in Gannon's room. They also found GPS data that shows Letitia went to a location, a scene in which they believe she first dropped Gannon's remains. And I say first because there is suspicion that his body had been moved several times. The affidavit also revealed information of a possible motive for Gannon's murder and disappearance, and that motive was that she was unhappy at home. Her internet browser history shows that she was searching for job information and moving information and moving companies for different cities, such as Los Angeles and Orlando and Pensacola in Florida. She also had the following Google searches from the 25th of January to the 28th of January. And remember, she reported Gannon missing on the 27th of January. So these searches took place in that 3-day period, really bookending the day in which Gannon was reported as missing. Some of these searches include, "I feel like I'm just a nanny, not a stepmom. Husband uses me to babysit his kids. Find a new husband. Sent my husband sexual messages and he ignores them. Make my husband want me more. Find a guy without kids." Okay, so these are clearly some concerning searches because she not only is showing that she feels unappreciated, but also showing that she's unhappy and she's looking for somebody new, which she wouldn't be looking for somebody new if she weren't planning on actually leaving the husband or essentially destroying this family. But then what's interesting is she had some more Google searches and she tried to delete these, but of course was unsuccessful. And these searches included, "They are asking for our son's toothbrush but said nothing is wrong. Police steps for our missing child. Police steps for our runaway. What is the process of our runaway child? Why my husband should choose me over his family. Find me a guy who wants me to take care of his kids and get paid." I mean, the list just goes on. As you can see, there are so many incriminating searches on her browser history. And maybe not necessarily 100% incriminating, but definitely suspect to where it shows that something isn't quite right. During their search, they of course seize her cell phone. So here's what they find in her cell phone records, not only in the timestamps and really creating a timeline, but also the content of what her text messages say and what really took place. And I have all of the timestamps and the timeline here, so I'm just going to walk you guys through it so that I can tell you exactly what happened. So on Monday, January 27th, the day Gannon was reported missing, that morning at 4:37 a.m., Letitia tells her employer that her stepdad was killed after being hit by a car and that she won't be going into work. Okay, so maybe already starting to plot a little bit. Gannon stayed home from school, and Letitia takes pictures on her cell phone of Gannon sleeping at 10:16 a.m. Now, I'm all for taking pictures of your kids, especially when they're cute and they're sleeping, but was this to have some sort of alibi or to have some sort of evidence that she was with him that day before something happened? It just seems a little suspicious. That surveillance footage had showed Letitia left the house. However, she leaves her cell phone at home from 9:56 a.m. to 2:45 p.m. And this is now text history that they had received off of Gannon's phone. At 10:37 a.m., a text is sent from Gannon's phone to Harley, and it says, "Tisha left her phone at home. If you need her, text me," as though it's Gannon talking. During this time, Letitia travels to Petco, and at 11:22 a.m., Letitia completes the purchase, but Gannon is not seen on the surveillance footage from that store. The whereabouts then are unknown between 11:22 a.m. and 1:22 p.m., a couple hours. At 1:22 p.m., Letitia makes another purchase at a different Petco. At 1:43 p.m., Gannon's phone searches, "Can my parent find my cell phone if it's off?" And detectives believe Letitia was using his phone and searching this. At 2:19 p.m., a vehicle returns to the house, and what appears to be Letitia gets out, and presumably Gannon, but it's hard to tell by the video, which we had talked about before. ADT motion detectors show no movement between 10:16 and 2:19 p.m. in the house, so they both were essentially out of the house that entire window because there's no movement in the house, and nothing is tripping up the motion sensors. At 2:22 p.m., Gannon and Letitia enter the house. Lane is at school, and Harley's at work. Then at 2:30 p.m., which this is the time in which Letitia had told detectives she was being raped at gunpoint, and then shortly after Gannon was abducted. Well, there shows movement upstairs and downstairs. At 2:45 p.m., the data shows that Letitia unlocked her phone. And this is where evidence really does get damning, because remember, she said that she was being raped for an hour. And I hardly doubt that a rapist is going to hand you your phone and be like, "Go ahead, make some calls. Let me get back to raping you in a minute." Like, there is just so much nonsense in this story that she manufactured. 3:15 p.m. is the time in which Letitia had said it was the last time she saw Gannon, that he said he was going to go play at a friend's house and he left the house and never returned. Lena shortly after returns home from school, and Letitia tells her that Gannon is asleep in her bed taking a nap. And she tells Lena, "Just go ahead, go outside and play. Your brother's taking a nap upstairs. He's in my room. Just go play, have fun. You're done with school for the day." And detectives believe the reason she was trying to get her out of the house and to go play outside is because she was cleaning up the crime scene and cleaning up the blood at this time. At 3:55 p.m., Gannon's father, Al, text messages his phone and says, "Hey, buddy," in which it went unread until 7:40 p.m. And they believe the reason why there was a huge gap before this message was read was because he was, of course, deceased during that time. And then Letitia had checked the phone. At 4:42 p.m., Letitia's daughter, Harley, arrives home from work in her white Jetta. She picks up Lena, and then both of the girls leave the residence, presumably to go run errands. At 5:14 p.m., a receipt shows the purchase of trash bags, baking soda, and vinegar. And this receipt is later found in Letitia's car. Also during this time that detectives believe Letitia is still cleaning up the mess. She originally had Lena go play outside. Now she has the two girls going and running errands and picking up cleaning supplies for her. And they believe she was in the house, Gannon was deceased, and she was cleaning up all of the mess. The reason detectives believe that the murder took place in Gannon's bedroom is because shortly after he initially went missing, when they started the investigation, and this is all outlined in the affidavit and it didn't come to light until much later in the investigation, on February 1st, during their investigation, they found a lot of blood in Gannon's room, found it in the hallway leading up to his bedroom, and they found blood in multiple areas of the house. They found blood in the hallway leading up to the utility room from the bedroom. They found it in the bedroom itself. They found it in the utility room itself, they found it on the staircase leading upstairs, they found it in the pathway to the garage, and they found the blood in the garage area itself. Multiple areas where they discovered blood. So in that nightly timeline, we now know that the receipt showed them picking up cleaning supplies at 5:14 p.m. and then at 6:55 p.m., that is when Letitia makes that infamous 911 call reporting Gannon as missing or possibly as a runaway. At 10 p.m. that night, detectives arrive to the house and they are interviewing the family, really trying to get all the information as they piece together this mystery. And later, as they go back and review body cam footage, they determine between photos that were taken earlier in the day and then the body cam footage from that evening when they went to the house to collect more of the statements and information on Gannon missing, that there was a huge difference in Gannon's room. His bed sheets were completely changed and his bed was pushed against the wall. And now we're going to circle back a little bit to the days after the disappearance and what Letitia's footsteps were, what her behavior was, and what really happened. The very next day, on Tuesday, January 28th, Letitia goes to pick up Al, Gannon's father, from the airport. She rents a Kia Rio at 8:30 a.m. and explains that the reason she has this rental car when she's picking up her husband is because authorities said that while they go out and search for Gannon, they don't want to scare him or scare him off, so to search for him in an unfamiliar car. And that if he recognized the car and thought he was in trouble, he wouldn't run away from it and it would be an easier step to reuniting. Which, I guess that's believable. He didn't question it, so fine. She picks him up in this Kia Rio. And then just a few minutes later, at 8:48 a.m., she texts her daughter Harley to pull her car into the garage. And now we're going to revisit some of that text and phone call history. So that day, at 4:04 p.m. to 4:17 p.m., investigators ask Letitia for Gannon's toothbrush for DNA. At 4:19 p.m., Letitia texts Al, Gannon's father, and says, "They are asking for our son's toothbrush, but said nothing is wrong." She says, "Something isn't right. I think they're hiding something." Al says, "Who? The police?" Letitia, "Yes, they asked for toothbrushes." Al, "What do you think they're hiding?" At 7 p.m., Letitia picks up her VW SUV that she left earlier that morning at the airport in the short-term parking lot when she picked up the Kia. And at 7:02 p.m., a receipt shows Letitia leaving the airport. Between 8:30 p.m. and 10:20 p.m., a two-hour window, location data from the VW that she had just picked up was in the area of Highway 105 and Perry Park Road in Douglas County, Colorado. And between 9:16 p.m. and 9:28 p.m., GPS data shows that the vehicle was driven into a rural area near Highway 105 and Perry Park Road and then driving out. And detectives believe from when she first picked up the VW at 7:02 that night, from the airport all the way into the early next morning after midnight, that was the block of window in which she was hiding Gannon's remains. At 10:45 that evening, Letitia makes a statement to the investigators through a text message, and it says, "What do you want from me? Because I have nothing. One of your very own leaked to me what you guys were doing. I did nothing / or am being set up. I'm really not even sure other than being told that by another blue with El Paso. I was told I couldn't go home to sleep, and on top of that, men were sent to a home with a minor female, and she was forced to stay there, not to even have good." I mean, she has horrible spelling and grammar. "Every conversation said that even at this moment, I can hear inside. What do you want from me?" And the detective responds simply saying, "Come in to talk to me. I would just like information to find Gannon." So now that timeline has been established of 7 p.m. to midnight in which they believe that she was dumping Gannon's remains. And then the very next day, which is January 29th now, just a couple of days after she reported him missing, that is when she had arrived to the police station 2 hours late to give her statement. And we're going to walk through the timeline of what happened that day. At 9 a.m., her rental car, the Kia Rio, is returned. Letitia was picked up by someone driving a white Jetta, presumably her daughter Harley, at 11:30 p.m. Surveillance video catches the VW SUV at the car wash with potential blood on the black bumper. That was right before she arrived with her interview with the police, which, remember, they said her vehicle arrived wet, as though it had just been washed. Letitia rents a Nissan Altima because they had seized her vehicle. And now that is her new car that she will be driving with as we continue to build out this timeline. Investigators thought she was shady too because they slapped a GPS tracker on it. Unbeknownst to Letitia, investigators find multiple carpet brushes with suspected carpet fibers on them in the dishwasher at the residence when they did their initial search. Investigators also locate an empty gallon of vinegar. And now we're going to get into those few days in which we said she was evading police questioning, they were unsure where she was, yet they were tracking her movement and trying to really figure out what was going on with her behavior and what was happening. And on Friday, January 31st, between 4:16 p.m. and 5:13 p.m., Letitia heads back to Douglas County in this Nissan Altima that she had rented, which was near Highway 105 and Perry Park Road in Douglas County. And detectives initially believed she went back to make sure Gannon's remains were not seen near the road and evidence of his body was fully covered up. Now they believe she had collected his remains to take with her to Florida to dispose of it, because we know he was found in Florida. Then, following that bizarre on-camera interview that she gave, in which she was trying to defend herself from all of these comments that she's the villain, which, hello, but she is. Almost immediately after that interview, she sets off on a cross-country road trip. And she goes on this road trip suspected to stay in South Carolina with her family, which is where she grew up, but her route cuts through Florida. And this whole time, she thought that law enforcement still believed she was in Colorado. That Saturday on February 1st, while Letitia is out gallivanting on her cross-country road trip, detectives find possible traces of blood on the rear vehicle, a rear passenger seat, a front passenger seat, and areas near the glove box, because remember, they had seized her vehicle at that time. Over the next few weeks, detectives do extensive searches at the residence. As I mentioned earlier, there was blood found in multiple areas of the house. However, the most blood and where they believe the crime scene really occurred was in Gannon's bedroom. And here's why. They say blood was found seeping through the carpet, through the pad, all the way down to the concrete, and that it stained the concrete. That has to be a heavy amount of blood to go all the way through the carpet, through the pad, and then down to the concrete and stain the concrete and really be absorbed into the concrete. They say blood stain and blood spatter were located on the wall in this area. 50 droplets of suspected blood were found on walls near Gannon's bed. Experts say blood stains on the walls were likely created by a gunshot, blunt force trauma, or a stabbing. It's horrible. And they say suspected blood is found behind, around the edges of an electrical socket as well, next to Gannon's bed. This really outlines a gruesome crime that took place in this 11-year-old's bedroom. And on his bed where he goes to sleep every night, probably feels safe, and there is just blood everywhere. On Thursday, February 13th, investigators started monitoring calls between Letitia and Al. And Al knew that these calls were being monitored, but it was really to get information on Letitia, see what information she would spill, and start to build their case a little bit more detailed. And during those calls, investigators say her story changed countless times. In one call, Letitia says that Gannon was burned with a candle, and to the point where his skin was bubbling, he then peeled it off and then rubbed the blood on the wall. Which Al never even asked about the blood. She brought that up willingly, probably trying to get ahead of them saying, "We discovered blood." She'd be like, "Oh yeah, well, I already told Al. He had this candle burn and he peeled it off and he rubbed the blood on the wall." Very calculated and really trying to deceive everybody at this point. The very next day, on February 14th, the calls show even more stories that she's spinning. She says that she was raped by Quincy Brown, which, remember, she had said before that it was a guy named Eduardo who had raped her that she met at a construction site and wanted to come over and do handyman work at the house. But now she's saying it's Quincy Brown. And she says she knew his name was Quincy Brown because his ID fell out of his pocket. She then goes on to send a photo of him to Al's cell phone. Here's what she tells Al. She says that Quincy followed her from Petco that afternoon and at some point was laying in the middle of the road in front of her. When she stopped not to run him over, he jumped in the car and made her take him home, where he then raped her. And police believe that Letitia fabricated this story because she had seen Quincy's photo in a most wanted lineup. She then spins one more story because, as if your head isn't spinning enough and this roller coaster isn't just having all these turns, let's throw one more into the mix. And she says that she and Gannon were near a county line road and Highway 105 in El Paso County on the 27th, the day Gannon went missing, and that Gannon was riding a bicycle in the area, fell, hit his head, and then was abducted by Quincy Brown. And Brown was driven by a man named Terrence. So it's like, at this point, you're telling so many different versions of events. How is anyone to believe a single one of them? And it just makes your credibility look completely shot. So what's the point of continuing to spin these manufactured stories? Later down the road, after Letitia's arrest, investigators ask her, "Why did you say that he fell off his bike and was abducted?" And she says, "Because I thought that's what Al wanted to hear." I mean, she's got to be crazy at this point. And remember, we haven't gotten to the big twist I was telling you about in the very, very beginning that comes at the end of this video. So if you can believe it, it gets even crazier. On Sunday, February 16th, she speaks with her friend Tara, and she tells Tara that she had given Al false statements because she knows he won't believe anything she says at this point. And then the very next day, on February 17th, remember, she's no longer in Colorado. She thinks police think she's in Colorado, but she's not. And police know she's not in Colorado. And at 1:53 p.m., she tells her friend Laura that she was thinking about flying to Colorado to take a lie detector test to prove her innocence. And she said, they still think I'm in Colorado. At 4:11 p.m., she tells an unknown female that she's going to take a lie detector test, but the test wouldn't be admissible in court and no law enforcement would be present. Tuesday, February 18th. At 10:14 a.m., Letitia calls a phone number associated with fakepolygraphs.com. And she tells the caller that she never received confirmation for a test that she paid for on their website. And the man on the other end of the call says that he's going to send her an email and follow up with her. So at 11:16 a.m., which was just an hour later, Letitia calls the phone number again and inquires about the email. The man on the phone says the report that she had ordered was blocked by management due to the questions that she had outlined in this report. Because basically it's a website where you say, okay, I want to order a fake polygraph. You tell them what the questions are, and then you also submit what the answers are. They draft it up and they give it to you, probably for like pranks and little things like that. I don't know. But because the questions and answers that she was asking them to draw up were so alarming, management put an entire block on the order. He continues to say that any test with illegal activities, the company has a right not to send it. So she says, what do you do now? Just delete it and go on about life and keep the money? And he says, yes, we do indeed. And she says, okay, gotcha, thanks, goodbye. Detectives reach out to this website and to the man who she spoke with to get a copy of what those questions were. And here is what she asked them to draw up. Did you participate in any way causing harm to your stepson? Answers, no. Did your stepson return with you to your home? Yes. Did you participate in any way in causing the death of your stepson? No. So, this is not something, obviously, that an innocent person would do. She's clearly trying to manufacture this fake polygraph test to prove her innocence, which also, wouldn't you think, though, as a normal human being, that if you hand deliver this piece of paper to the authorities, they're going to A, ask you, where'd you get the polygraph? Who did it? Okay, great, then I'm sure you don't mind if we ask you to do another polygraph then, do you? I mean, she didn't really think this through. Now they believe they have more than enough evidence on Letitia at this point. So on February 28th, the judge signs her arrest warrant. And that takes us right over to Monday, March 2nd, where we know Letitia was arrested in South Carolina and then shortly after was extradited to Colorado Springs. Currently, Letitia is charged with 13 felonies, and I'm gonna read them to you. First-degree murder after deliberation. First-degree murder of a person under 12 by someone in a position of trust. Child abuse resulting in death. Tampering with a deceased human body. Tampering with physical evidence. 7 counts of a crime of violence for using a weapon. And the weapons listed in this complaint include a firearm, blunt object, and sharp object. 1 count of crime of violence causing severe bodily injury or death. But here is where the biggest turn comes, and it gets even crazier, if you can believe it. On June 4th, just a little over a month ago, Letitia is charged with 1 count of solicitation to commit escape. She tried to escape from jail. Here is what the breakdown says, and I have to read it just because it's so crazy that, like, I don't want to miss any detail. It says that Letitia's alleged scheme involved using a broom handle to bust her cell window with help from a fellow inmate who described herself as Italian and kind of a bad boy. Okay. But the fellow inmate told jail deputies about the plan and gave them notes from Letitia that had asked for her help. The fellow inmate told deputies that she did not want to help Letitia because she was worried about her own charges and knew about Letitia's charges, and she doesn't want to be involved or have anything to do with anything like that. In 2 notes, which were partially written in code, Letitia told the other inmate that a family member deposited $75,000 in a checking account and suggested that she would be willing to share that money in exchange for this inmate's help. According to the affidavit, she writes, "You have my word to make sure we are MIA. I got us covered." Letitia said she has measured herself and knew she would fit through the window. She needed the other inmate to provide the broom handles. Letitia is segregated from other inmates and now is only allowed out of her cell for 1 hour per day. And during that 1 hour, she spends her free time alone. She's also classified as an escape risk and is shackled anytime deputies have to take her outside the facility. I mean, you not only committed this crime and now the jig's up, but now you're trying to escape, and like the ball's on this woman. And then just a couple of weeks ago on July 17th, during a status hearing, prosecutors say that they expect Letitia to be moved, probably this week they suggest, she hasn't been moved yet, to a hospital to undergo mental evaluation for competency, and that will really determine if she is fit to stand trial. So we'll see what happens and what comes from that and what happens once she's actually moved to this hospital. Looking back at the case as a whole, it is just, there are so many twists and turns along the way and so many other details that I didn't even uncover in this video because we would literally be here all day. But it does show that this woman is not only super manipulative, but like the deceit and the evil brewing inside of you to not only try to kill your stepson and lie to your family and friends, pretend you're looking for him, really be taking his body across the country to dispose of his remains under a bridge. You are just a vile creature. And it is heartbreaking to think that somebody who Gannon trusted, a person in his life in which he looked at as a parent, would do this kind of betrayal and harm him in such a hurtful way. And then continue to not only have the balls to lie and paint herself as the victim through these rape scenarios and that everybody's villainizing her, so I'm gonna go on camera and defend myself. But then you actually get caught because the evidence proves that you are the one responsible and you then try to escape from prison. I can't, like, it is crazy. The ball's on this woman. It is just a horrible story through and through, and it is just such a glaring reminder for us to always have our guard up, to be careful with those even who we give full trust to with our children, and to always keep an eye out and, again, follow your gut feeling if you feel something's off. Look into it a little more. You can't just blindly trust people anymore, because this is just another case and more evidence that proves that, unfortunately, is no longer the case, and we have to just be ultra careful. So our thoughts, of course, go out to Gannon's family, and our thoughts are with them, and our prayers are with you. We are hopeful for the maximum possible sentence for Letitia, just because it warrants the absolute max. And as I continue to hear updates, I will of course come and I will share them with you, and hopefully we'll get some new information soon and learn what her punishment really will be, assuming that it of course fits all of these heinous crimes that she has been charged with and she is guilty of. If you want to show your support for this channel, please go ahead and hit that subscribe button, like, comment, share, review, rate if you're listening to the podcast version. I love getting your feedback and hearing from you guys. So if you have any case recommendations, please also shoot them my way. The email is in the description box below. And until the next case, stay safe. Thanks, guys. Bye.